the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. Here he is, Michael Savage.
Dr. Gress, a pleasure to have you on the Michael Savage podcast and your new book, The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. I've heard that phrase for so many years. You know, up the patriarchy. It started, as I know, in my lifetime with Bella Abzug. How far back does it really go, Dr. Gress?
Wow. Well, it certainly predates Bella. It actually goes all the way back to the 1780s, 1790s with Mary Wollstonecraft. That's where I started my research. And it just like Snowball keeps building and building and building. And
Tell us who that is in the 1780s. I wasn't around then. People think I was, but I wasn't.
So Mary Wollstonecraft is considered the grandmother, godmother of feminism. She wrote this work called The Vindication of the Rights of Woman. And she's writing at the time of the French Revolution and very much inspired by Thomas Paine and a lot of the radicals at that time. Her husband was actually a man named William Godwin, who was really one of the first anarchists and promoters of, you know, getting rid of marriage and all of these kinds of things. So they're very much part of the romantic movement, philosophical movement. But she, her idea was really to get rid of, any kind of hierarchy. And she was really moving towards this egalitarian ideal.
Savage. Michael Savage, a host like no other.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Don't you agree with me that, you know, overthrowing the patriarchy was an attempt to introduce a matriarchy?
Yeah, well, I mean, we get to that for sure. I mean, absolutely. That comes another century later.
It takes 100 years. Okay. So wait, within 100 years, the matriarchy arises in the form, let's say, of Hillary Clinton. Let's pick her as a matriarchy.
Okay. Well, that's 200 years later. Yeah.
Okay. So going ahead now, here we are with trans women athletes. Women themselves are now considered to be the problem. Drag queens, as you say, performing obscene parodies of women.
Yeah.
Females enslaved for men's pleasure. Where is feminism today? I don't know where it is, Dr. Gress. Where has it gone?
Well, I think it's gone where they intended it to go. I mean, the early feminists asked the question, how do we help women? But they didn't ask, how do we help women as women? Because they saw fertility as really the problem. So they've asked the question, how do we help women become like men?
They said fertility is the problem?
Fertility is really the issue, because that's what makes us different from men. That's really makes us vulnerable. This is why women had, you know, often women had incredibly hard lives. And so they were trying to navigate around that. And so, you know, in the 1960s, this is really when things are, you know, light up much more than they had been.
Right.
The movement just really explodes. But you can see this real idealization of the masculine over the feminine and over women. And so this is really where this kind of schizophrenic relationship comes in, where, you know, women are supposed to be, you know, empowered in all these different ways, but it's really at the expense of certainly fertility, but all these things that typically were understood as women. So we haven't really said anything good about being a woman, you know, for 50 years. And so this is why you've got all these young girls who are thinking, I don't want to be a man, but I don't want to be a woman. You know, that's Abigail Schreier talks about this in her book, Irreparable damage that these young girls that are transitioning, they want to be like non-girls. They don't want, you know, they're not ogling girls and lifting weights. They are just trying to avoid the female body because we don't really understand what woman is anymore, obviously.
Are they androgynous? Would you say androgyny is where they're at?
Yeah, I think that's where they've been trying to go. I mean, in the 1970s, it was very clear that this idea of getting rid of gender.
The clothing in the 70s became, the 60s, the clothing became unisex clothing.
Mm-hmm,
I remember it well because I lived through it. And as the styles changed where women were wearing men's clothing. Men were not yet wearing women's clothing. Women were wearing the bell bottoms and the look was very unisex in the 60s. It was cool looking. Everyone liked it. It kind of had a nice sexuality to it. At least that's what it felt like. So now look where we are today with it's female Monkey. It's fake women now, completely fake women.
Yeah.
Telling women to be silent and shut up and go away.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly what's happened. Fake women. You just put on a skirt and some lipstick and you too can be a woman.
I understand transvestia and it's been around since ancient times. The clothing change. I get that. Men dressing as women for, let's say, internal sexual gratification. That's not an anomaly per se. It's not a very common phenomenon, but it's not really that weird in the scope of human history. Wouldn't you say that's true?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think what's gotten weird is just the fact that we've normalized it and we've trying to make it look like this is somehow normal adult behavior. And of course, this is all coming from this idea that, you know, we can remake ourselves into whatever we want. You know, it goes back to Nietzsche and filtered through Simone de Beauvoir and whatnot. But these are the radical ideas that I don't think we really realize how much they have taken root in the culture. And
I like your philosophical references because I've read all of those people. Did you say Nietzsche?
I did say Nietzsche. Yeah.
Now, why does Nietzsche play a role in this thinking?
Nietzsche's this, you know, he wants to break out of all kinds of taboos or things that he thinks are controlling and containing people. You know, he wants the Übermensch, the man, a great man, the Superman that sort of has the capacity to reinvent himself in any way possible. So this is, you know, gets passed on through Jean-Paul Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir picks this up in existentialism. And this is really at the source of it, is this idea that we can kind of reinvent ourselves into anything that we want. It's just a matter of will instead of really looking at the body. And, you know, we see this in a lot of the feminist rhetoric too, just this, the language talks about this idea of essentialism. You know, you can't actually associate a woman with her body anymore. And, you know, it's these kinds of intellectual distinctions that they've made that, you know,
all of art throughout history. I'm sorry, as someone who's collected sculpture and paintings my whole life, I grew up in an antique business store. And I've studied art in many cultures. I mean, women have been glorified, deified for their beauty in every culture, going in primitive societies, even in carvings, the woman's body is deified.
Yeah.
And fertility is deified by every primitive culture.
Right. Right. And these are the things that the culture has been really pushing, you know, feminism has really been pushing to get rid of, because this is a way in which, you know, it's obviously coupled with Marxism too. There's a whole power element. And you can see that power, I think, especially with regard to the way that men have, you know, reacted or been treated by the movement. I mean, I think most men genuinely love women and want to do what's best for the women in their lives. And, you know, most men, I think when you talk about the subject, feel like they have absolutely no voice whatsoever. And they know better than to even engage in a conversation about feminism. But that's a real problem, you know, when half the population is afraid of this topic.
You're a professor, aren't you, currently?
I'm not currently teaching anyone other than my children.
Can I ask how many children you have without getting personal?
Sure. I have 5 kids.
Oh, my God. Okay. So you're not just writing an intellectual book.
Right.
Dr. Carrie Gress is writing a textbook.
It might become that. I think it's a page turner, though. I've been told people have been reading it pretty quickly because I didn't want it to be just another academic book that, you know, 50 people read and these ideas don't get out there. So I think it's a pretty readable book, not just a textbook.
So you are really into this whole feminist movement, what it's done to family, what it's done to women. And the education books, quote unquote, that are now being injected into our children's minds in schools have innocuous names like Pride Puppy, Born Ready, and Prince and Knight. And what do they really teach children? They're aiming now at the little kids to do what with these books, Dr.
Well, part of it is just to sexualize children at a very early stage. That's part of it. But it's also to sort of normalize all of these elements that have are part of the LGBT plus community. I mean, that's really the effort. And it's also a way to kind of divide and conquer. I mean, all of this is being done kind of around the parents, you know, working around the parents or hiding it from the parents. And this is just another, you know, Marxist way that the family is being fractured, because the government and the schools end up becoming kind of big brother, or, you know, the gentle guiding leader that the children are supposed to follow, and they're not supposed to be listening to their parents anymore. So it's again, just another iteration of how do we destroy the nuclear family by, you know, really destroying the authority of the parents.
That's a very good point, because I remember when I first studied Marxism, God, I don't know how many decades ago, their number one goal was to decimate or destroy or atomize the family, man plus woman, because they said that bond is too strong for the state to dominate.
Yeah.
And actually, that's what the battle is right now. You know, there was a great book in the 60s that was a big hit called Our Bodies, Ourselves by the feminists. I'm sure you've read that along the way, right? Our Bodies, Ourselves.
I know, I've seen it. I didn't read that. I spent a lot of time more with certainly Betty Friedan's work, and then Kate Millett was another one, and the whole Frankfurt School era.
Okay. Well, your next book could be Our Children, Ourselves. Get even with them.
Yeah.
But, okay, so you have a book called The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. And, you know, as you speak, Dr. Gress, I'm thinking, you say, okay, the object of Marxism is to destroy the family, replace the family with the state as the father and the mother and the family, make the state the family. Mm-hmm. But then I think of warfare. And I think of the Russian Bolshevik army, which was very heavily peopled with women who fought alongside the men in the forests against the Nazis, for example, in combat positions. They were given guns. They slept on the same cold ground. There was free love, so to speak, in the woods for survival, if not for everything else. The Chinese army, Mao's army, was filled with women, wasn't it? Women soldiers.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting to see how much the Chinese women really resisted communism. They were like, I don't want a job and to work in the fields and then to go home and take care of my family. So it really wasn't until the later revolution that they absorbed it. Whereas American women, it was presented in very, wasn't this warfare like the Soviet takeover. It was very much through the culture that's how all of these ideas were taken on. And Betty Friedan was, I have a ton of research in my book about Betty Friedan's communist connections and how she was really trying to get women to think like communists, to think of themselves as an ideal worker. But of course, she did it in very clever ways. She used a lot of psychology and, you know, kind of this pressed into that victim mentality of, you know, the home is a comfortable concentration camp. You're a victim. She called it that. She uses that.
Oh, I agree with her. In my house, it was.
Oh, that's hysterical. Well, in any event,
I grew up in an old European European family, first generation American. It, you know, the father definitely was the ruler. I don't mean he beat anybody, but he certainly was the boss. He was il duce. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Benevolent.
You probably weren't starving like those in real concentration camps, and
no,
you know, being
of course
to death, gassed, and all of that. So the hyperbole is pretty remarkable. But she's using a lot of psychology to try and push women into the workplace, because she really believed that's where our freedom would come from, you know, right along with Engels, right along with Hitler, actually, whom she hated. But, you know, this is the idea: work will set you free. And that's what we have seen at Auschwitz. I mean,
when women entered the workforce, we'd be equal. Is that the point?
We would be free. That's where we would get our freedom. Yeah, that was her idea.
Savage. The Savage Nation. It's Savage on Demand.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Okay, your book is very interesting in many ways. And The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us, by Carrie Gress, 50 Years of Feminism, have had the opposite of the intended effect and have granted primacy of place to the traditionally male sphere of life, while simultaneously devaluing the typical attributes, virtues, and strengths of women. Could you explain that sentence? That's a complex sentence.
Yeah. Well, I think it's that idea that I mentioned previously about the idealization of the masculine, that women are going to be happier when they're independent women. They can, you know, have sexual relationships with men the way that men typically have had with women, that free love idea. They don't need men for money. They don't need children. In fact, children and husbands have become really the enemy and the obstacle to happiness is in the feminist ideology. So yeah, that's the idea. But also simultaneously is getting rid of the notion of motherhood as something that is essential to womanhood. And I don't just mean that biologically. I mean, obviously, many women have children, but not all women are going to have children. I think women have the capacity to mother others psychologically and spiritually. And that's one of the gifts that we have that has been really denigrated. And much of it's been really replaced with resentment and, sort of like what Betty Friedan was eliciting out of us, this belief that, you know, we're being treated unfairly or that we're victims, you know, no matter what's happening to us. And as a result, it's also kind of created this entitlement. There's been a shift in the way that we see ourselves as women, but what's replaced it is the sense of entitlement or resentment or victimization or, you know, fear of missing out. And you can't really build a civilization on those ideas, you know, on rage and anger, especially when it's directed at men or children. And
several dictators built their societies on fear, rage, and hatred.
Are they still around?
No, but the societies.
Right. It doesn't last. It just ends up in a tyranny. So,
many people absolutely died as a result of this hatred. Yeah. And mm-hmm. And now this hatred towards the male, particularly, you'll notice, I'm sure, that it's only directed at the white male.
Yeah,
rarely exactly. Have I seen any hatred directed at males of color, so to speak.
It happens occasionally when they're being featured with women. Then they become sort of the default, but not very often. It's you're right. It's definitely.
Well, okay. So does this get turned around? Is there enough of an uprising against this whole trans hysteria? It's like a mass hysteria in reverse here.
Yeah.
Tell us that not only are we wrong and sick and mentally cruel to deny trans sexuals access to our most vulnerable population, but they're mm-hmm. actually somehow healthier than the normal people, so to speak. And there are normal people. At the risk of sounding, you know, antiquated, there are normal people.
Yeah. Yeah.
The majority of people are rather normal. Gender wise, they're real plus their X's, their XX's and XY's. I mean, there's a lot of us, a lot of X's and XX's and XY's. Of course, there's a spectrum. I understand what the sexual fluidity is myself, and I understand there are people on the spectrum of gender identity. I see it, I've lived with it, I understand it. Whether it was the gym teacher of the 50s or go back to the cultural icons, Amelia Earhart, the American, the great American solo pilot who disappeared somewhere over the Pacific. She was clearly a unigender woman, wasn't she?
Yeah. Well, I think she certainly has those kinds of characteristics. But I haven't dug much into
Millie Earhart. Or a gym teacher. She could have been a gym
teacher. Beyond the mystery.
She could have been a gym teacher in Queens, New York when I was a kid with a whistle and a soccer ball.
Right.
And that was okay. Tomboy. What about tomboys? Where do they fit into all this?
I don't know. I mean, I think that's the danger. I mean, I grew up as a tomboy. I played with my younger brother more than I played with my older sisters. And I played tennis and was very much involved in athletics. And I grew up in Oregon. So I can imagine if I grew up in Oregon now with those sort of similar interests, I might, fall prey to some of this. But I think that's it, is we grow out of it and we have different stages. And that doesn't mean, just because there are things we're interested in things that boys do, that doesn't make us boys.
See, here's how I see it. And tell me what you're the expert. I've raised children. And when children are young, they do a lot of weird things. Mm-hmm. A boy will put on his sister's clothing. Mm-hmm. A girl will put on her brother's clothing.
Yeah.
They change roles because that's part of being a child.
Yeah.
And what you have to do, that doesn't mean that they are that other gender or that other sex. Mm-hmm. A child's mind is not fully mature until their 20s, according to all biology that I have read. So how can they say that a 10-year-old really is trans and they need surgery or medicine? To me, that's absolutely child abuse.
Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right. I think that it's, these are ideas that are popular in the culture right now. They're also incredibly lucrative. And
lucrative.
I think it's incredibly.
Yeah, lucre. We mustn't forget the lucre.
Yeah, don't forget that. And it goes along with the narrative, but the real tragedy is just the fact that so much of this damage is absolutely irreparable. There's not this idea that puberty can be somehow paused and not damaged by the hormones that are being pumped in to do that is just insane. And, I think that we're going to be seeing more and more lawsuits from people that are detransitioning. And I think that's probably where the end will happen, again, back to the money, because this is going to start costing people a lot of money because of the damage that's being done. But right now, it's absolutely, there are people that don't think this is child abuse, that think that this is the right and good thing to do. And, it's horrifying to see how we have gotten to this point.
When they normalize
experimenting on 10-year-olds.
Savage. The Savage Nation. It's Savage, uncut, unfiltered, and raw.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
I saw an article the other day by Annette Bening, a good actress, very good actress. So she has a daughter who became a boy, and she says that basically we all should have a transgender child. We benefit from it. I said, are these people really that crazy? And why, by the way, I ask myself, do so many in Hollywood have these transgender children? It's a higher than normal number or percentage of their kids wind up transgender. I wonder what is it? Because they live in fantasy, or there are no limits? There's no instruction, because actually setting limits with children requires work, commitment, and a strength of character to say no to a child. It's easy to say yes to a child and just keep giving them candy by letting them do what they want, right?
Yeah, no, without a doubt. So, I think it's a great question to look at these pockets of where it's really coming from and, what parents are teaching or not teaching their children, and really giving in to the fads and the trends and all the crazes. But it's kind of a mess.
Dr. Gress, they say that 20% of young kids now think that they're trans.
It's incredible what the numbers are between trans and queer and all of this. I mean, this is a huge movement. And
I live north of San Francisco, so I mean, I do go out and look. I sit in restaurants. I look at people. I don't sit and judge, but I observe. It's different than judging necessarily. I observe everything. I'm like a very keen observer of life. Mm-hmm. At every other table, I mean, I see a kid who looks like a trans or someone who is of one sex and looking to be dressing like another, sitting and chatting with the families or the friends, like it's a part of the norm today.
In this very liberal area. Yeah. And that's just the influence. I mean, this is, you know, we all know that teenage culture is like this, that there are going to be people that are the trendsetters and the influencers. And now it's just sadly just so easy to find on phones and be
influencers. Trendsetters, influencers. In other words, they actually think that they're the cool ones.
Yeah.
They're cool. They're cooler than the normals.
Abigail Schreier pulls this out beautifully in her book because she talks about how the girls that are drawn to this, a lot of them are on the autism spectrum. They're all very bright. They're a little bit awkward. And by transitioning, suddenly they have the limelight and the attention that they have been craving for, maybe their whole life.
Oh, God, that's true.
They suddenly become the center of attention and very popular. And, they're being praised by everyone, including our president. And
why is he embracing this when there are so few people who are actually trans? What in the hell are they thinking in the Biden family that by reaching out and antagonizing most of the country, especially parents of regular children, how many trans people can there be who vote?
Yeah, well, it's not that. It's more just the appearance of sympathy. And, I don't want to speculate what's going on in the Biden's minds. But I think that the big thing is just appeasing the cultural elites. And, this is the problem is this has come from feminism. And feminism has been the gateway drug to the woke culture that we're existing in. And there is this patina of kindness about all of this, that this is a kind thing to do to affirm the child who thinks that, the little girl that thinks she wants to be a boy. And nobody wants to look like the mean guy. And that's how it's being, really portrayed in the culture. So it's not just about appeasing the trans. It's about appeasing those who, think that the trans element is actually good. And the feminist movement has been leaning towards this, but again, by this idea of erasing gender entirely. And so this is part and parcel of the movement, the ideology. And now we see this infighting between those, the feminists who are for trans and those who aren't. So that's what's going to happen when you have an ideology and it's not built on truth is there's no way to really adjudicate it because it's really built on something that's not actually true.
So your book, Dr. Carrie Gress, G-R-E-S-S, The End of Womanhouse, Smashing a Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. I want to ask you a question. What can parents do to protect their children from radicals? I'm sure you have that in your book, correct?
I don't actually. My colleague, Noelle Maring, has written a book called Awake, Not Woke that goes into that topic a lot more directly. But what I think needs to really happen is just we need to start understanding what a woman is and not get, stay in this space where we can't define womanhood anymore.
What is a woman?
The short answer is obviously an adult female human, but I think a woman is actually a broader definition. And again, I have a whole chapter on this, really goes into the idea that a woman is meant to mother, whether biologically, psychologically, or spiritually, which means that she shelters, nourishes, protects, and provides for the needs of those around her to become the people that God made them to be.
Maternal instinct. Remember the word, that antiquated term, going back to the dark ages of when I was raised. I remember when I was in high school and going into college, the guys would talk about girls in all the different ways that boys will talk about girls. But then some of them were very clever. They would say, well, why don't you try to get her maternal instinct to kick in? She'll like you more. The guys who didn't want to go with the frontal approach went with the weak approach.
Right.
They were the broken bird and the maternal instinct would kick in and the girls would protect the poor boy. You're laughing because that's guys tried every trick in the book to get girls to like them.
Right. Of course. Oh, that is really sweet, actually.
Did you say that's sexist?
I said it's really sweet, actually.
Sorry. I don't know anymore. I'm from another universe. So I speak sometimes, is from another time. But the maternal instinct was seen that women had a maternal instinct. And there were guys who were sensitive guys who were not so much conning the woman as expressing who they really were. And they needed a strong woman to take care of them.
Yeah. Well, there's that. I think the biggest struggle that we're really facing is just the complete absence of an understanding of what it means to be a woman, and kind of the demonization of wanting to serve others, wanting to raise children.
Demonization.
Seeing children as, you know, something that's bad for us. Because if you look at the statistics, women are not getting happier. I mean, this is one of the motivations for writing this book was, we're not seeing, you know, we're seeing an increase in depression, suicide rates, substance abuse, all of these things just continue to keep going up and up and up. So feminism is not providing a way to improve the lives of women, certainly, especially in the lower classes, where we're seeing not just the breakdown of marriages, but actually the evolution of a new relationship. The psychologist Lionel Tiger described this term bureaugamy, where women are actually married to the state.
What is the word?
Bureaugamy.
Bureaugamy. That's a new one to me.
Yeah.
Bureaugamy. Married to the state. Good one.
We're actually married to the state because that's who's providing for the financial needs. And, you know, it's not a new idea. I mean, this is what the Obama administration did with that woman, Julia. Remember that imaginary woman, Julia, that they trotted out as, you know, the ideal woman who never needed a man in her whole life. And the state was just going to take care of her.
When was that? When was that presented?
I think it was around the first several years of Obama's administration.
Oh, my God. A bureaugamy.
Connected with Obamacare, I think, too, was sort of part of that. All the reproductive health pieces were thrown in there.
You could call it Obamagamy. Obamagamy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good. That
big,
works.
Big daddy, in other words, married to the state. Il Duce.
Yep.
So, Dr. Gress, if a person comes home from school, so let's say they have a 10-year-old child, boy or girl. And the boy or girl comes home and says, "You know, Mom, I think I'm trans."
Yeah.
What should a parent do in your estimation? Yeah.
Well, I think that you obviously have to do a lot of talking and communicating and listening, but you also need to figure out where that idea is coming from. I mean, it's obviously come from school. That's a problem. It's coming from influencers. It's probably coming from multiple different places. I think it's important to look too at, again, that question of attention and what needs are being met by that statement. Does the child suddenly have a different kind of status at the school or among friends? So I think that, you know, it's a really hard thing to navigate. I know that parents have gone to really extreme lengths to make sure and to protect their children when those conversations start happening, to taking them out of schools, putting them in different places. I think that, you know, the hard part depends on where you live, how active the schools are in terms of hiding things, what the laws say, you know, where parental rights start and stop. So I guess that, you know, that's one of the key things is for parents to know what the laws are in the state and then also have a relationship with the school and really be aware of what's going on.
Savage, home of borders, language, culture, the Savage Nation.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Actually, the funniest cartoon I saw, and I don't mean to make light of it, is who put it out? I wonder, some actor, very famous actor. Said, "I was a man trapped in a woman's body. Help." No, "I was a man trapped in a woman's body. Dot, dot, dot. Then I was born." I thought it was the funniest thing I ever saw. It was a cartoon. I forget.
Right.
I don't know who. One of the very, it wasn't Mel Gibson. It was not James Woods. It was one of those people.
Right.
"I was trapped in a woman's body. Then I became, then I was born." I thought it was funny. So I sent it to someone I know who's a rather liberal therapist. And she said, "Ha. But I'm not going to bash trans. I support them."
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's where we're at. And I think we just have to be careful about where we're letting our kids be and who we're letting, you know, talk to them. And a lot of it is coming, you know, encouragement's coming from those who see it as this great thing and this great boon for society and this great next step of progress in society. And that's
the society in history has ever gone this far into this sexual deviancy, because that's what it has to be called. Yeah. And it can be said almost in a non-moral way, amoral, sorry, nothing to do with morality. It was called a deviancy because a deviant means deviant from the norm. Norm being XXXY society. Yeah. Which society has gone farthest from that heteronorm? Ancient Greece?
Yeah. Well, I mean, other than ours?
Yes.
I mean, I would say maybe the Romans. I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
Was Greece this far gone? Was the wine?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a good question. I know, you know, one of the things I talk about in my book is the work of J.D. Unwin, which if you don't know his work, it's fascinating. He's a 1930s sociologist, talks about the collapse of cultures. And he said that he was an agnostic. He didn't really go in with an agenda, but he said he looked at 80 cultures and the pattern of destruction that happens. And he said, there was one thing that happened in every culture. And he said, as soon as I saw that happen in a culture, I knew it had about three generations. It had about 100 years left before it would completely collapse.
And what was
and that thing was the premarital sex. As soon as that's allowed in the culture, three things will happen. One is end of monogamy. The second is the absence of faith. Faith will go away from the culture. And the third one is the absence of reason. Reason will dissolve. People will only be able to work off of emotions. So it's fascinating to obviously look at our own culture and see, you know, clearly all three of those things have come to pass. We're very much in a post-rational culture, and, you know, faith is diminished. Monogamy feels like it's hanging by a thread. So, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said for this on a societal scale, that, you know, I think your reference to being amoral is a really important point, because people get too wrapped up into the idea that, oh, this is just your opinion or your what your church says or whatever. But these are actually have real consequences for the future of our country and you know, just life the way that we know it.
You know, I live near the water, and I observe bird life all the time, particularly seagulls. You can learn a lot from seagulls. But I watch ducks swimming by in the water, you know, near salt water. And, you know, when things get confusing for me, even at my age, I find looking at nature. I'm a botanist by training, for example. Everyone understands the fundamentals of reproduction, whether it be plant or animal. And I think that a way to help children is to actually take them to see animals. You see the mother duck with the little ducklings swimming behind the mother duck. It's the cutest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Going on since the beginning of time. They're not confused. Mm-hmm. There's the gander, there's the goose, there's the, you know, the mother duck, the father duck.
Eggs, all that.
How do children not understand that right away?
Well, I think that they do, but I think that it just gets so wrapped up in all of these other realities they're, you know, pushing into their lives.
So we're disconnected from nature in the society that we're living in. It's a media society, social media society, advertising society, totally disconnected from reality. A kid who grows up on a farm certainly knows what a boy and a girl, horse is.
Right.
They know what a cow and a bull is.
Don't go milking the bull.
Well, in America, they would say the bull can be milked.
They do, I'm sure.
Joe Biden would say, in fact, they would make for a good citizen is a bull that could be milked.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dr. Gress, your book is great, and I recommend it to everyone listening to this show. It'll straighten a lot of people's minds out. The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us, by Dr. Carrie Gress, G-R-E-S-S. Any final words for the Savage audience?
No, I just thanks so much for having me. It's really fun chatting with you and obviously getting perspective on all of this crazy stuff.
Well, I sure need it. I don't get much of it. You know, I have to go back to one. I saw the ad agency behind the whole Bud Light fiasco.
Yeah.
How could they think that a beer that is so fundamentally aimed at the redneck or the guy, you know, I don't say redneck in a pejorative way either. The working American man who drinks a Bud Light. Why would he identify with a transsexual? Why? Yeah.
But you know what? It hadn't happened. No one had pushed back before. There had been small pushbacks, small boycotts, but nobody had done it on this massive scale before. So I think that they just thought it's working everywhere else, or we've been effective. No one's cared before. This can't really hurt us that much. So I think that it was just they finally, you know, poked the wrong bull in the eye.
Do you think that that's the turning point? Because the corporation sure embraced this whole woke thing.
I think what Target's seeing is phenomenal in terms of those numbers. I mean, that this the boat between Target and Bud Light, it's a signal that people have had enough. And I think they're feeling it in the pocketbook, and other people are watching.
You know, I watch ads. I'm a big TV watcher. Not just the news. I watch a lot of stuff on television. And I've been a TV observer since I'm 5 years old. I love television. It's a great, great relaxation for me, especially movies. So I watch the ads when I'm on cable in particular, and they're so grating. You don't see a heterosexual couple, and I see that changing slowly now. Yep. They're reintroducing, quote, normal couples again.
Mm-hmm.
And of the same race, by the way, if you can believe that, shocking.
Oh.
They're showing white men and white women together. Mm-hmm. Every other ad was a mixed race or a gay couple or a trans couple hugging for an ad for diabetes every ad for a drug was shown with gay women walking around in the woods after they were healed with this miracle medicine. They suddenly were able to hike again. They could do mountain climbing again. I said, who comes up with this stuff?
Yeah. But
it's what I'm saying is my observation is it looks like it's moving back toward the norm now.
Do you think
that we've gone past that?
You know, I sure hope so. I mean, I feel like it's just the overreach has just been incredible. And I think it's heartening to hear that maybe we have reached peak insanity.
You probably don't have time to watch television.
I don't.
I do. I like to watch movies, particularly Buñuel movies. I saw some great TCM movies the other day by Louis Buñuel, done in the 60s and 70s, and were awesome. He was a surrealist, of course, Spanish surrealist. And to me, Buñuel, B-U-N-U-E-L, and people don't know who he is. He did some great movies. But the point is, if this is not surrealism, what we're living through today, I'd like to know what is. And let's hope to God that people like you with your book, The End of Woman, will bring us back to some realism. And I thank you for being with us on the Savage Nation podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for your time. I appreciate it, Doctor. Bye now.
Savage.
Well, thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it and learned something from it. We have about 400 other episodes available for you to listen to absolutely free. You can go back into our vast library of podcasts and listen to any one of them at any time. And remember this, if you want to listen to my podcast ad-free, sign up for the Savage Premium membership and get access to ad-free podcasts as well as some premium content from our Savage archives. How do you sign up for those ad-free podcasts? Please visit michaelsavage.com for a link. Again, thank you for your listenership. This is Michael Savage.